Good morning, everyone, and welcome to day five. We just looking at the program this morning, it just struck me, time seems to have moved very fast and we've only got 2 days left. And I think peace of mind is really quite a journey. I've been on quite a journey, and if you reflect back on day one, we began to explore concepts about the self. And then on day two, we moved into the connection with the Supreme and trying to get into the methodologies of how to have that union of I, the soul, with the Supreme. And following that, we began to open up and look into the law of karma. And yesterday, we heard about the tree of humanity. So we've been moving along, and even in between, we heard some stories about this institution, the Brahma Kumaris, and the life of Brahma Baba. And even we had a little bit of time to learn about vegetarian diet. And what we thought this morning was perhaps it's time just to have a full session on questions, your questions. I don't know, do you have a lot of questions? Do you have a lot of questions? Maybe show hands. Who's got questions you'd like to ask? Not one hand.
Yes, one.
There's one. Okay. So I've got quite a few that have been written here. But what we thought is that if you would like to ask a question, could you please first specify whether you would like either, we have two on the stage here, as you see, Dr. Nirmala and Sister Jenty, so you can specify to whom you would like the question directed. Secondly, you have two options. You can write it if you feel more comfortable, but it must be in English, if that's okay. If English isn't a language you're comfortable writing, and if you could get your companion to translate your question for you, then give it to me. I'm going to start off with a few written questions, and then maybe we'll have time for, we'll pass some microphones around, a few handheld microphones, so if you'd like to ask questions directly, then that is also fine. So that's here. If you want to write a question even now and come and just give it to me here at the stage, that's fine too.
So I will give them 5 minutes to write them.
I think we can start off actually because I've already got 8 or 10 questions. But if you want to write a question, as I say, just bring it to the front of the stage and I will ask on your behalf. So we're going to begin with a question for Sister Jenty. And the question is, do you think that the law of karma is operating differently now than before? And before means, let's say, since the year 2000. So is the law of karma operating differently before the year 2000 and after the year 2000? So it'd be interesting to see what Sister Jenny has to say.
Good morning and Om Shanti. Thank you for that, Charlie. I don't know about the year 2000, but certainly in the last little while, the last couple of decades even maybe, I feel that the law of karma has been speeding up. And yesterday we spoke about that period of the end of the night and the beginning of the day and the dawn in between. And I think the speeding up process of karma is part of that, that before the day begins, all the karma that's connected with the period up until then has to be settled and sorted out. So yes, it does feel as if karma is speeding up, both in terms of the settlement of karma, but also there's another factor which is very beautiful, and that is that from the time that we have very clear information of who God is, and we connect with God, and we do karma in the remembrance of God, then every action we perform, which is a good action in God's remembrance, then the return of that karma is not just one-to-one, but there's a multiplication there. Every action I do for God, with love for God, in God's remembrance, then brings me a hundredfold return. And that's the new karma that I'm creating for the day. And so the old karma being settled speeds up, but also the inspiration and the power to do good karma is also possible.
Thank you. And a question for Dr. Nirmala. Would you please explain the process by which one can burn off karma through meditation?
Process of learning through karma.
What is the process that you can burn off karma through meditation?
In a worldly sense, if somebody does any criminal act, illegal act, and naturally they get punishment. They have to suffer. And sometimes they are jailed. In jail there is isolation as well as they lose their freedom. They are not free to do whatever they want. They have to follow disciplines of jail and they are restricted from doing so many different things. Now, the settlement of karma is either through suffering. That is, if I'm giving sorrow to someone, I receive sorrow. If I hit somebody, I'll be hit by somebody in return. If I hurt them mentally, I'll be receiving that sort of mental sorrow. Now, during meditation, what we do is, it's a subtle form of punishment, no? We isolate ourselves. It's like jail, no? We isolate ourselves, we don't communicate with other people, we discipline ourselves that, okay, we sit at this time, we don't eat certain type of food, we don't mix with certain type of people. It is discipline. On one hand, people say, oh, it's a hard life. Wake up early in the morning, being vegetarian, giving up non-veg food. So on one hand they think, oh, it's like a punishment or sorrow or suffering. But by understanding that that is going to help me, we go through that renunciation with love. And so meditation helps us to discipline ourselves and sort of punish ourselves, isolate ourselves. And also, it's like a fire. Meditation, some people experience so much energy within. So it's like a fire energy that absorbs our karma as well as it helps in changing our sanskaras. Because if my personality changes, if from short-tempered I become calm, then actually I'm not reacting to other people. Otherwise what happens? Somebody gets angry, I get angry, somebody hits me, I hit them. So we keep on creating more karma. But now because of our discipline or because of our calmness, love, tolerance, whatever it is, we keep quiet. So we are not interacting with that anger or hatred with somebody. So naturally, we cut that cycle of action and reaction. Otherwise, negative action, negative reaction, negative action, negative reaction keeps on going and ongoing. So through meditation, we are able to discipline ourselves, we are able to be more tolerant, we are able to not react in a negative way. So we are clearing our karma that way.
This is Sister Jayanti. Help me, please. Help me, please, to see the logic behind predestined roles and my free will.
I can only try. A very simple formula for me is to think about destiny as that which has happened already. And so I stand here and I look back and I say, well, whatever had to happen, happened. That was destined. But as from this moment on, whatever I choose to do in the next moment, the next hour, the next day, the next week, and so on, is absolutely my choice. And I'm able to strengthen myself in making my choice through spiritual study, because the more information you have, the more informed you are about making your choices based on truth, on wisdom. And so I study, and on the basis of that understanding and knowledge, then I know what it is going to create the future that I would like to have. But the other factor is that you heard this word sanskaras, right? The personality traits that push you in one direction or another. Now, if I have yoga, then I'm going to be able to draw such strength from God that it's going to be the personality traits that are negative that force their way into my actions, but I'll be able to again emerge the original goodness of the self and allow those original sanskaras of truth and love, peace to emerge in my actions. And so with knowledge and yoga, I truly am responsible for making my choices, but also I have the strength to be able to put those choices through into reality, into action. I can't change what's happened yesterday, but I can learn from it, I can understand it, and I can have the determination not to repeat any mistakes, but it's become fixed. You know, once the film has been recorded, the recording is there, so that's what's happened. But whatever is happening from this moment on, I can choose what to do and how to make it happen.
For Dr. Numala, how do I know if I am an old soul or a young soul?
Old soul or new soul?
Yes. How many lives do I have to live before I go to the soul world?
Okay. So, what we say is old soul means those who have gone through the full cycle from golden, silver, copper, iron age. Then we say it's an old soul, those souls are eternal, nothing old and new. But for sake of explanation, we say old soul is the one who has gone through the full cycle. Golden, silver, copper, iron age. New soul, we say, those who have eaten few birds. Maybe they have taken only two or three or four birds. Those who are old souls, that is, those who have gone through the full cycle, what we find is when they listen about this cycle of golden, silver, copper, iron age, they feel, yeah, that's right, that's right, that's right. And they accept that there can be a land where there was always happiness, always health, wealth, everything was fine, one rich and one kingdom. They accept it. The new souls who have just experienced iron age, where there is happiness and sorrow, more sorrow than happiness, if we tell them that There was a time when you were completely happy. There was no sorrow, no sickness, no problem. They'll say, oh no, it's not possible. There must be sorrow in the life. How can there be life without sorrow? Or they will not agree with these things. So that is one way of deciding whether you are old or new. The second thing is, the new souls will be comparatively in a good stage, in the sense that they have health, wealth, happiness, comparatively. And they may have charisma and they would be praised and worshipped by many people. For example, when anybody's first birth is there, they are more in a state of purity than other people. So, some gurus like Sai Baba and all, who are so popular and so praised, I would say they are new souls because they have got that charisma and following and people appreciate them so much. Whereas the old souls at this time, they have taken many, many births. So they may not be so much charismatic like Brahma Baba. He was ordinary. And only few people who came in contact could understand and appreciate his qualities and had that love and respect and praise for him. So that way, these are the kinds of old or new souls.
And how many lives do I have to live before I go to the soul world?
I'm afraid this is the last birth.
That's a very essential answer, isn't it?
So, it may be good, it may be bad. Because some people really want to be liberated from this world of sorrow, so for them it's a good news. Few years to go through the hard times. But those who think, okay, if not in this birth, I'll do something in the next birth or next birth or next birth, then they have no chance.
Thank you. Sister Jayanti, one brother said the BKs are a religion. Another said it is not. Are you keeping your options open?
I think yesterday I touched on this to a great extent, in which I said that the heart of every religion is spirituality. And this is what BKs are about, a spiritual understanding and a spiritual lifestyle. And dharma in a sense of following through the highest ideals in life. And so, no, I don't call myself a Hindu, but neither do I fit into any of the other branches of the tree that exist. And so I'm a little bit out of place in that sense then. And so I don't fit within any of these branches, but I would say that, yes, it's a spiritual lifestyle. So I don't think it's a religion as such, but yes, there are aspects of what would be described as religion in the sense of, we talk about God, we have an understanding of rebirth, so you don't normally think about those things as being part of some materialistic consciousness, but spiritual consciousness. So I can see where some say yes and some say no, and I find myself in the middle.
For Dr. Nirmala, quite a practical question for those in business. How to go away from wrong actions and relationships in business and not become bankrupt?
Is it that whoever is doing honest business, do they become bankrupt? Does it mean like that? I won't agree with that. You can be honest and and also maintain good relationship without being corrupt. And to some extent you might have to do something dishonestly, but as we say, sometimes white lies are, we have to carry on some sort of dishonesty or white lies, but I think you can follow at least 80-90% of honesty and legal thing in your business.
There's quite a long question, well, a few questions for Sister Jayanti, but I think I'll read them all together, if that's okay, because they have a similar theme. And some of the words I'm not quite sure, it's a little bit difficult for me to read, but I'll try my best. Why do I have these eyes to cry here? Many people seem to feel the same thing like in the presence of a daddy. So why do sometimes I feel perhaps emotional in the presence of a daddy? I had dreams before I came here with people and situations that I've lived here. For example, with Sister Jayanti. What does this mean? People that we meet here have this emotional impact, although we've never met before. Did you catch all of that?
I don't know that I caught it all, but I'll give it an attempt.
Okay, thank you.
I know that for myself, when I'm in front of daddies, I feel that I'm in the presence of total purity and truth and love. I saw the impact that Dadiji had on all of you. She spoke so briefly, and yet it was absolutely from her heart. It was nothing intellectual. It was totally what she is and who she is. And just a few moments of music and dancing with all of you, and again I saw how that emerged, that pure happiness within each and every one of you. With Daddy Gulzar again, I saw the impact that she had of just a tremendous simplicity and almost a childlike approach, and yet total truth and wisdom. And so we meet such people so rarely in the world today, that when we face such people, then it uncovers all the masks and layers that we've been collecting and adding on. And it's as if they reach to the very core of our being, and so that pure emotion of love, or just deep emotion of coming in contact with truth, is what you experience. And when we talk about drishti, that drishti very much is the same thing as happening. The soul is in contact with the soul in the awareness of God. And so again, sometimes there's tears of love, tears of joy. I don't think it's tears of sorrow. I think more it's the love and the joy and that presence of purity and truth that we experience. And when I heard Charlie ask Dr. Rumit questions about new souls, old souls, many births, I sort of wondered, do you think she's an astrologer? But so what happens here is that it does seem to be a gathering of souls who've been through many, many births in the cycle together. And so in this atmosphere of purity, then memories that are there latent within the soul sometimes are revealed. The curtain parts a little bit and you get a glimpse of the recording that's there within. And there's that connection. It might not be, you know, I met you in such and such a place at such and such a time in such and such a situation. But there's that resonance, there's that connection. Because it is that gathering of old souls who have been through many, many experiences together. So I think that that answers it also. I know that, again, when I met the Dadis, I was 8 years old when I first met Daddy Janki and Brahma Baba and Mama. and after that again in my teens, and there was a feeling of deep, deep connection with them. I'd been away from India for about 6 years. When I came back again, I began meeting these personalities, and there was a sense of belonging, and London and the rest of the world seemed very far away, as if I didn't belong there, but I belonged here. And the here was not the physical location, but the here was this connection with these souls. And so I'm not surprised that many of you are having that experience.
Well, Dr. Numala, why do some cause a lot of sorrow or hurt to others, but live a life with all the luxuries of life? But a good person receives all kinds of punishment in their life. Why does this unbalance or this lack of balance occur? It's another question of karma.
The thing is, sometimes we are able to see only present, or we are only able to see outside, not inside of an individual. Because the person who is giving sorrow to others, they may have material possessions and everything that they want for their comfort and luxury, but they may not be internally happy. They may not be internally peaceful. They may have lots of worries and lots of anxiety and tension. You never know. Or it may be that at that moment they are happy, but in the end they may suffer, because that's where karma, rules of the laws of the karma explains us, past, present and future. All the three times we have to see to really understand whether they are ever happy or not. Because whoever has given sorrow to others will receive sorrow in one way or other in future. And so one has to see, wait to see the result of their, in the rest of their life. Now second thing about the one who is doing good actions still suffering. And that's also, as I said, is they, whether they are internally suffering or not, you never know. Because many times people will say, okay, people are poor here. In India, you see, people are poor here, isn't it? So on a superficial level, you'll say, oh, they are suffering. But those poor people, if you see, their faces are always smiling. They are not really unhappy. Whereas rich people in the Western country, some of them you never see smile on their face. They are moving around with so much tension. So richness or wealth does not always give us happiness, or that is not the indication that they are always happy. And the one who might be even suffering while doing good action, the reason being, as I said, we don't know what is their past, what some wrong karma they may have done in the past, that's why they are suffering. But the good karma they are doing now, they will receive happiness of that one time or another, sometime or other, or at least their conscience will not bite. Whereas those who are doing corrupt action or wrong action or giving sorrow to others, there is always that fear in their mind. Sometimes they may be caught by government because they are doing tax fraud or whatever it is. So there is always fear or anxiety or worry about whatever they are doing wrong. So I think sometimes we just see the present, we are not able to see the past and future, and that's why we are judging in a wrong sense.
Thank you. But Sister Jenty, it is said that bodily illnesses are also due to wrong actions. Here, with many years of practicing yoga, souls or even the daddies have to go through different sicknesses. What does this mean?
Dr. Nirmala touched upon it a minute ago, in a sense that if I look at the story of the soul and the journey of the soul through eternity, the figure that we've been given, and you don't have to remember the figure or be stuck to it, but it's many, many births. It's, in fact, the figure is of 64 births. And so there's a long, long period of time through which there's been a huge amount of karma accumulated. And now, as we come to this transition period, the end of the old and the beginning of the new cycle, it's in this very, very short space of time that we're trying to settle the karma of thousands of years. That is a lot of karma. If you think about the karma you accumulate in the space of a day, just one day, multiply that 7 times, multiply that by, you know? So it's a lot of karma that we're all carrying. And the manifestation of that karma comes in our state of health, our state of wealth, our relationships, our state of mind, all of these things. And so I'm not surprised that the bodies go through the things that they go through. And I think all of us at some point or another have to go through similar things also. But the difference I see is that when it's a person like Dadi Gulzar, for example, about 20 days ago she was very, very sick. And was it past karma? Was it present karma in a sense that she picked up a bug somewhere? That's also a factor. And probably this time it was some books that she picked up. But what I saw when I arrived in India about 10 days ago, and she was at that moment still coming out of that illness, I saw her just smiling. And so there's a difference in that stage in which you're settling karma, in which, yes, the body is ill, but it's settling. And your state of consciousness is up above, and is not affected by the physical health of the body or the pain of the body or anything like that. And not only is there just that state of joy and happiness, but it's also a state in which there's an abundance, an overflow of that joy. So she's actually serving the doctors and nurses that she goes to when she goes into hospital. And they look at her and say, but we've never seen a patient like you. Somebody who's able to smile no matter what the tribulations of the body may be. And so the consciousness isn't impinged by the things that are happening to the body, but also the role of service continues. That soul is serving even though the body is unwell. And then the speed of recovery, you know, when I saw her a few days, when I arrived in India, I had a question, would she be able to travel up the mountain and meet you all? And I mentioned this to Dr. Nirmala, and he said, okay, you'll just wait and see. Don't say anything now, just wait and see. And the recovery was amazing, very, very fast. So I see that we all have to settle karma. The way in which we settle karma is different. It depends on our yoga power, our wisdom, our understanding. But also you can also see the other side where illness comes, and yes, on one level it's karma being settled, but the negativity of the person is such that instead of settling, they're also accumulating more karma. You know how some people will say, oh, you see, I got sick and nobody bothered to come and visit me, nobody came to help me, nobody cares about me, nobody loves me. And the story goes on. And so that sort of inner state of discontent is a state in which the karma isn't being settled, there's more being accumulated. And if somebody goes to visit them, you know, instead of like the bodies giving them joy and love, and this person is moaning and groaning and complaining, then you say, oh dear, okay, well, I don't think I'll bother to visit them for another 10 days, you know? So there's a difference in the way in which we settle karma, though everybody has to settle karma.
Thank you. Dr. Nemala, could you talk about God's will? Is there a concept of this in the BKs?
God's will is always that we are going to be happy, we enjoy the life. So it is God's desire that all children, wherever they are, they should be free from suffering, sorrow, and be ever happy and peaceful, and be liberated from suffering. So that is God's will, and that's why not only God has such a will, but He performs such an elevated karma of coming, teaching us, and guiding us what to do, how to do, and giving us strength. And that's the difference between God and other preachers. Preachers will preach us, but they will not be able to give us strength. Whereas God not only teaches, but He gives us that strength to be happy and peaceful. So that is God's will. But we don't think that in each and every situation is God's will that is doing everything. And sometimes people think, okay, if God will want me to do something, I will do little things or things. That I feel that I have got also my free will. And there is something destined also. But in general, God's will is always that, we should be all happy.
Can I just add something to that? In India at least, not so much abroad, but in India at least, I've seen that when it's something which is good, like going to a spiritual discourse or something, people will generally say, well, if it's God's will, then it'll happen. But when it's something like going to the cinema or going to the restaurant, they won't think it's God's will, they'll just do it.
Perhaps if either of you would like to comment on a question to the other, that's just please do. There are many spiritual movements around the world which share common elements with that of the Brahma Kumaris. Is the Brahma Kumaris approach the only one that delivers the Raja Yoga experience?
Can you repeat the question?
There are many spiritual movements around the world which share common elements with that of the Brahma Kumaris. Is the Brahma Kumaris approach the only one that delivers the Raja Yoga experience?
If I first define Raja Yoga, and in fact we're getting signals that it's a moment to practice Raja Yoga, I think. It's nearly 10:30 and the lights are flickering. But Raja Yoga means the understanding of the soul and God and the relationship of the two. And so yoga, the union, and Raja, the highest union, yoga with the Supreme, with God. I think I've been in contact with many, many spiritual organizations across the world. There's several spiritual supermarkets that happen in different corners of the world at different times that I get exposed to. But as far as I know, the knowledge of soul, in the way that Brahma Baba has shared, the knowledge of God very specifically in the way that has been given, I haven't come across such very detailed, specific instructions and information in that way. So yes, Raj Yoga in that way is really only being taught here. And I accept that every path that people follow is a path which is of truth for them, a path that they feel comfortable with, that is right for them. You know, the image of the tree and how every leaf has its own place on a specific branch. So you can't pull a leaf off this branch and stick it on somewhere else. It's not possible. And so there'll be some place that I feel comfortable with, that I resonate with, and that place will also be that which is right for me, and there is truth there too. But in terms of Raj Yoga and the specific information of soul and God, it's very specific in terms of what's being taught here. Oh, Shanti. So can I add to that? In Raj Yoga, there are different varieties of Raj Yoga. Because even Swami Vivekananda's teaching is also known as Raj Yoga. But Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga is different from even other meditation or Raj Yoga. And second thing is, being the branches of one tree, as you must have heard yesterday, there's so much similarity between many spiritual paths as well as religions. So there is similarity, but they are all different branches and different, and there is uniqueness of each of them. Whereas what Brahma Kumaris are teaching is unique to them only.
For Dr. Nirmala, the BKs originated in India. Can you say some words about the challenges of living as a BK out of India and its strong cultural context? Maybe both of you can have a go at this question.
I was born in India, and when I saw these teachings, I went to London and Australia and other countries. One thing is, challenges are always there when you are in a different culture. And initially, especially when I went first time to England, there was a lot of, England and America, there was a lot of culture shock or surprises and all. But one thing was sure, I knew what I want and how I want to lead my life, and I had known the truth, and I'm just in other country, in other culture to give my God's message. So for me, then, knowing that it is a variety, society, variety, people, variety, actors, variety, culture. So for me then to understand and accept them was not so difficult. And I could carry on my way of living and inspiring others to lead this sort of a life, because at times, people used to comment or criticize, saying, once one lady in Australia was on the beach and moving around in the sari, one woman said, "You are in this country, you should wear what we are wearing." And it didn't affect me, I didn't take any sorrow, because I am proud of what I am and what I am wearing, so why should I worry about their criticism or comment? So that way, I wasn't affected at all. And I think she was unhappy because most of the other Australian women who were with me were wearing kurta pajama, so she was a bit more angry, not only because of me, but because I influenced others. But it didn't worry me.
My story is a little bit different in that I grew up in England and so exposed to the West from a very early age, and at home then quite a traditional family Hindu influence. And then through my teens, an identity crisis, East, West, where do I belong, what is right, what isn't right. And I was a natural vegetarian, and so nobody told me that I had to be a vegetarian, but in fact, even before my mother came to the Brahma Kumaris and became a vegetarian, I was a vegetarian because I couldn't tolerate anything else. And so growing up in London, it was interesting because I wanted to maintain my own diet, and It was a challenge because at school you used to get boiled potatoes and carrots, full stop. And that was it. So I knew what I had to do at that moment, but so there were certain things which today maybe some people will say a cultural vegetarian diet is Indian, but no. Vegetarian diet is something which is now recognized worldwide as being a very healthy, natural way of living, very friendly for the ecology also, so many different things. But it meant that when I came to Raj Yoga, it was because I was searching. It wasn't a cultural factor, but East and West neither actually answered my questions about God, personality, the spirit, the soul. And then I found that the teachings of the Brahma Kumaris actually gave me an understanding which transcended East and West. And so after having spent about a year and a half in India studying these things and then going back again to London, there wasn't a center. So there was no structure or system to support me at that point. And I really just had to follow what I felt was right and things that now made sense to me and were according to my own conscience. And so it was teachings that Baba had given that were helping me at that time to move through all the questions and issues that I was facing, both as a teenager but also as one that was coming into a cultural situation of crisis of identity. And it was, for example, knowledge of the soul. It was a wonderful thing that helped me transcend the things of feminism, because in the 60s, just about starting at that point, you know, the feminist movement and so on, and soul consciousness made me realize that it's not a factor. My dignity is in my own hands, in my own awareness, and how others see me can change if I see myself in the way that spirituality teaches me, and with that consciousness I can change their consciousness of how they see me. And so the feminist issue was in fact one of the first things that I realized that soul consciousness could help in. And then when I'd gone back, England had changed dramatically within a few years, because prior to that there was no overt racial problem. But went back in 69, and then by 71 there was a huge influx of Indians from Africa, and instantly the atmosphere changed and there was a big, big racial issue. And again I found that soul consciousness and knowing who I am, this is not who I am, this is who I am, helped me go beyond that conflict also in a way that was very simple and natural and easy. And so I never had to deal with cultural issues of Raj Yoga in a sense, but the essence of Raj Yoga, of the knowledge of the soul and God, was so powerful that it was helping me cope with everything around me. A little while later, when the first Westerners started to take the teachings, including Charlie and others, but it was at that time that then things became a question of culture, like the music. And so, you know, you heard the music at 10:30, it's definitely of this country. And yes, it's the music we play here in Madhuban. But it was lovely because Daddy Janki, who you'll meet tonight, she was in London, and when Charlie and a few others said to Daddy, "Daddy, why can't we have Western music?" She said, "Fine, go ahead, have Western music." And Charlie may or may not want to sing you the song he composed. So Western music came onto the scene. And then when the first the brothers didn't teach us anything about Western vegetarian cooking, but the sisters did. And then some brothers actually, a cordon bleu cook came along in London, a brother who had cordon bleu training, and he cooked the most exquisite Western vegetarian meals. And so it's great, you know. So as things have grown and expanded, the central core of the teachings are as they always were. It's wonderful to see how the application has been a very cultural application. And so when the Russians come and they perform the wonderful dances of their tradition and culture, it's beautiful, we appreciate it. When the Spanish people come and they bring with them olive oil and share it with us to put on our salads, it's fantastic. You know, it's not a problem. But I think you need to first understand the essence of Raj Yoga and not get stuck into the externals, which in India, definitely you've got Indian music, the Indian food, the Indian clothes, and some of that might have been carried abroad. But the teachings are teachings of spirituality, of the soul, and not external things. And then, yes, translate them into your own culture, and you'll find the great beauty that there is within that variety. Does it answer the question?
Yes. Thank you, that was excellent. Perhaps to continue along the theme a little bit, Sister Jenty, do you really need to be dressed in white to be celibate, to avoid drugs and eating meat to be good?
Okay, again, very much from my own personal stance. When I started Raj Yoga and I decided with the mistakes of 6 weeks of studying this, that this is what I wanted for my life, I decided that it was much, much easier for me to adopt this costume. The amount of time and energy and money that goes into choosing clothes, matching clothes, all of that, I felt, oh, it was a liberation for me. And so it was a very personal choice. And today, of course, in London, we tell people, when you want to come for meditation in the morning, wear whatever you want and they feel comfortable in white at the time. But during the day, we tell them, no, you mustn't go to work in a white sari or costume that Charlie is wearing now, because you'll just create a huge reaction in people, and it's not what Raj Yoga is about. And so you can follow the principles of Raj Yoga without changing your costume, but where it's possible, and for me it was comfortable and natural and easy to wear this, this is what I chose, and it definitely helped me. Because when I went back to England, and I came into contact with all my old friends and everything, it was a very important statement that I have changed my life and it's different and I'm not going to go back to those things. But because I'm Indian, a sari was okay. A Westerner in a sari, and it might create lots of questions. So I think it's personal situation, personal karma and whatever. But definitely, you don't need to wear white clothes to be celibate. But yes, you do need to be free from drugs and alcohol and be careful about a vegetarian diet if you want to have good meditation. That is a fact, because whatever I eat is impacting not only my body, but my mind. You know, in London we had these don't drink and drive laws a few decades ago. But just a few years ago, coming up the mountain, you may have noticed the monkeys, but you may not have noticed a little sign on the road. And that says, don't drink and drive. You know, bubble. And why the sign has only been there for a few years? Because alcohol was relatively restricted in India until just a few years ago. It's only recently that things have sort of become relaxed and open in terms of alcohol. But my point is that alcohol, and you see the instant impact on your consciousness and capacity for discernment and judgment. But equally, meat has that impact. Drugs definitely have an impact on the way the brain functions. That is a fact. And so, if I'm trying to stabilize my mind, if my intention is to be able to have yoga, then there are certain things that are helpful and certain things that are not so helpful. And so what I'd say is, make it your choice on the basis of information, do your homework, do your research. There's a lot of information available out there. And on the basis of that information, whatever it is you choose is that which you'll find for yourself. If you want to meditate, there's a way to go about it. If you don't want to meditate, that's fine.
Thank you. Dr. Nirmala, a question. Human population is increasing on Earth. Where do the souls come from and where did they all get generated? Created.
In fact, the souls are eternal, immortal, and neither created nor destroyed. But just as when we see a drama, actors keep on coming on the stage. It's not that they are suddenly popping up and created, but they were already there. They were backstage, come on the stage, and the role finished, they go away from the stage. So we souls, the actors, we stay in soul world. And as our time comes to play the part on this earth, we come and take this costume to play this part. So once we finish this part of one birth, naturally we will shed one body costume and take another and keep on playing different roles in this unlimited world drama. So they are not created, newly created, they just come on the stage. Their number is fixed of the souls. Only some come on the stage to play the part when their part is here. Once our part will be over, we all will go back home.
Thank you. We only have a few more minutes, quite a few questions. I just may request Sister Jensen and Dr. Nirmala to be essenceful to see if we can cover as many as possible. An interesting question for Sister Jenti. Heads of organizations often have to take very strict decisions to punish somebody. How to do it that you do not hurt a soul, either the self or the other person? And if I need to face somebody who has brought a big damage, has created a problem, how do I do it in the correct way?
What I've seen Adipakash Muni do is to be able to call the person in front of her and to be able to speak to them very peacefully without any passion or emotion, but very calmly, very peacefully, with a lot of love and compassion, be able to tell them that this and this and this is what has happened. What do they think should be the outcome? And when it's really, really serious, then I've seen people being asked to leave Mount Abu Madhuban or being asked not to come back to a center. But the way it's handled is with love and compassion, without any fire or anger or retribution involved within that. And so that's a very important lesson, that you're loving the soul, and you know, I think it was Gandhi who said, it's the sin that is wrong, not the sinner, because the person may be a sinner, but there's a lot of good in them still. But yes, what has been done, there has to be some sort of balancing of that, so that there's an annulment of that in a sense. And so I think the secret is to be detached and then use God's love and truth.
Thank you. So Dr. Nirmala, we have always had the understanding that God is the creator of this world. However, I have been told that the DK knowledge says that this world is just created, but not by God. This is a big challenge for me to accept. Can you please clarify?
So as I was telling, the souls are eternal. The nature or elements are also eternal. They are neither created nor destroyed. Only thing is, it changes. So God's rule comes in helping us to transform from impure to pure, or iron age to golden age, which is nobody else can do. So in other words, we can say God is establishes new world, not create new world, but changes old world to the new world. So sometimes people think, okay, God created that world, but it is just changing old into new, which is where there is health, wealth, happiness, prosperity, everything is there, and that's why we praise Him as Creator. It's just understanding. God will help you to understand His role, because problem has been so far in all mystic or philosophy or religion that different people have come and shared their own views, whereas once we understand who is God and what He is telling and what is the truth, naturally it helps us to reconcile our old views, because to change old to new is a bit more difficult, isn't it? To write on a blank paper it's easy, but where there is already something written, which means if in my mind already some ideas are fixed, it takes a while to change those ideas or reconcile those ideas. But as you experience through meditation the truth, you'll find it becomes gradually easier to understand and accept the truth.
And maybe just one last question for Sister Jinti. We have learned a lot about the beautiful qualities of our souls, but what about consciousness? What is consciousness in your opinion, and how does consciousness relate to our souls?
It's a very interesting question, because I was part of a group that got together, Science and Consciousness Symposia, for a whole number of years. And then since last year there's been a connection with the Beckley Foundation in England, which also deals with the subject of consciousness exploration. So that's why I say it's a very, very interesting subject, fascinating. And for me, consciousness is the soul. I don't think there's a separation between consciousness and soul, in a sense that it is the soul, the spiritual being that I am, that is consciousness itself. It is this that is the living being. And so within I, the being, the soul, I am the conscious being. And within that is all the things that you've been hearing about, thoughts and feelings and emotions and memory and conscience and the whole thing. But it's there within consciousness. And so the thing about science and so on and so on is that there's this debate that goes on whether consciousness is part of the brain or a byproduct of the brain, and spirituality would say that consciousness is quite separate and distinct from the brain, and it is the soul.
So thank you very much. I do apologize for those few questions we didn't have time for. Perhaps you'll get an opportunity in the next couple of days to ask those questions in smaller sessions. And perhaps we could show our appreciation to Dr. Numa and Sister Jinti. So we'll finish with just a minute of silence, and then we'll move off, have a little break.